Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how much do you think about integrity? How big is that? I think it's getting bigger and bigger all the time because we're in a time of challenge to integrity, and we need to learn more about how it works in the world. And to help us do that, there's a great new book called The Law of Small Things. And I guess integrity starts that way. And it's a wonderful book. I really enjoyed reading it. And I'm so glad that we have the author on our show to talk about this, Stuart Brody. Stu, welcome to Energy Stew.
Thank you, Peter. What a pleasure to work with you on this.
This is so important because I think integrity is getting demolished in the world right now by people who are putting it to its test. And often it seems like they're getting away with it. But your book is going to put them to shame and get everybody straight.
Starting with myself, I hope.
Well, what you say in the book is really important, is that integrity is not something in stone. It's a process. It's something, truth is something that always needs to learn more discernment. And, you know, we keep on shaping it and fine-tuning it to meet the needs of society, to meet the needs of changing times. We have to revisit truth to make sure that we've got it right. Because I think it's always a learning process.
Yeah, great point.
And so your book covers so many ways that society slips by, that maybe it's a new day and we have other purposes rather than have to be honorable to something other than our immediate survival needs. So we're going to sacrifice some of this integrity, this greater integrity, for my personal integrity, which is my immediate pocketbook or wallet or whatever else, or power need, whatever else goes on, or saving face, different ways that we avoid integrity to, you know, kind of create a mask that helps us survive.
Right. Self-interest is a mask. Self-interest is a masquerade of duty.
But that's so important to say that self-interest can't be trusted. We have to go to that higher place of ourselves more than our ego. Let's say self-interest is ego. And ego can't be trusted because ego has a lower vibration of survival.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. And maybe that's really a key, is to look who's talking. Is it my ego or is it my soul?
Well, I think that's a great point. Ego is necessary, obviously, to set certain boundaries. If you have no ego, you may have no boundaries in relationship. It's true of a relationship, but also of a community, of a nation. But on the other hand, if you only have boundaries, then you can't transcend those boundaries and understand your own limitations, the limitations of the ego. Now, I'm not reciting psychological dogma or nationalistic rhetoric. I'm talking about just the function of getting along in the world. If you're only for yourself, well, then you're not going to have any kind of meaningful relationship. And I think the book is interesting because truthfulness is the vehicle for transcending the ego from only for being for yourself to being for a community.
Ego will distort truth.
And ego will thoroughly distort truth. So You have to have the skill. That's what integrity is, the skill at practicing, right? So you have to have the skill to transcend ego. And I sometimes put it in these terms, which are, you know, you have to be able to ask yourself whether everything you believe or anything you believe is true. You have to be able to question whether all your beliefs are possibly not right. And
where are you seeing that from?
Say that again.
Where are you seeing that? Where's your viewpoint coming from to discern truth?
Great. Okay. So here's where that's coming from. I think I understood at some point before I wrote the book, and this motivated the book, that many of my beliefs were just stories that I made up in order to serve egotistical needs. And we all do that. If you walk through a day, even with your best friends, and you listen to them tell stories, it's an exercise in self-justification. And it really doesn't have much truth most of the time.
Because it's pride, and pride can distort truth.
Yeah, it's a way of ordering, it's sense making. A story is a way of making sense. But we cling to the story that's most convenient, and it puts us in the best light. That's what
sure.
we do.
Why not?
Integrity requires you to step out of that kind of convention and ask yourself, what are you serving when you manufacture these stories? I mean, the first chapter in the book is called The White Lie, because you feel pure after telling it. And we tell the story that it doesn't hurt anybody, and that it's inconsequential, and that we feel pure after it. So those are all stories we tell ourselves. But the fact is that we're lying.
Well, not all. I mean, we're not, it's not like talking about, what we're proud about ourselves is lying. It's just that it can be distorted.
Yes.
And we don't know. And, you know, we hope that our friends that we talk with are honorable and are, you know, just coming from authentic, heartful experiences.
Okay, right.
And, you know, so it's more in the marketplace that I'm concerned about, that whether it be the marketplace of a company, of politics, of just, you know, the world of commerce, and also even the politics of family, mm-hmm. and because that's a marketplace too. Marketplace, right. We're all meat in our family, and in some ways, hopefully not in very many ways, but because there are egos, there's families are where our survival mechanisms are honed as children, with our families, our parents, and how do I deal with this, and and who do I need to be to overcome the challenge of my family. And for many people it's very difficult, and so we learn habits and the way of addressing the world that, depending on our conditioning and also on the mechanics of personality that we're born to, we start forming the way we deal with the world. And I think for many people, it's limited. I think many people are running scared in life and are not true.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a psychologist, or I'm an observer like everyone else of the psychology, the dynamics, psychological dynamics of family. But I believe in my own case, and I think in talking to others, that there are things that get hurt. There's damage.
Yes.
Even when people are well-intentioned, when parents are well-intentioned. And I think that what happens, I think, to a lot of us, we do carry a lot of hurt. And as a result, we blame others. I mean, that's the best way to deflect it. So we have a society that engages in a rich vernacular of blame or a self-justification at the expense of others. So you think of things like you snooze, you lose, no harm, no foul, fake it till you make it, you can't fight City Hall, I'm looking out for number one. I mean, just the list goes on and on of ways that we think of, okay, we got to look out for ourselves rather than the community in which we're operating and hopefully contributing.
Right. Your book has so many wonderful examples of how we're troubled in life and lose our way and find ways of justifying it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you. That's what I tried to do.
Oh, you know, it's wonderful. You've really picked out great opportunities to exhibit what truthfulness and integrity should be about and aren't. And in so many cases where people just use convenience get by because their survival is more important, or what they think is survival is more important than truth. But unfortunately, it's a distortion. And that's what a lot of what is in your book is really about, how we're confused by behaviors all around us. And do you want to join this misbehavior or not? And maybe if you don't join it, you lose.
Yeah, how about that? Well, you made a great point when you used the word discernment. We see these behaviors, but it's very important, I think, for all of us as a culture to give ourselves a little bit of a break. We're surrounded by a culture that proclaims the value of integrity, but really degrades it. In almost every way, and we can get into that. So when you use the word discernment, which I also use, we're talking about elevating your perception so that you can see how you're ensnared by this. Everyone wants to be free, let's face it. Nobody wants to go through life saying, I'm entrapped, I'm enslaved by my beliefs, by my political orientation, by my family, by my past. People want to be free. Freedom lies in discernment.
Right, but fear,
yes,
spoils discernment.
Right. That's true. So how do we get, so let's ask ourselves, you and me, we say, this dialogue, how do we transcend fear which blocks discernment?
By more discernment. But it's a work in progress. It never stops trying to find out how, where we're falling prey to the energies around us. Yeah, exactly. And what is the ultimate truth? And I really do believe that there are ultimate truths in life. There is goodness, and goodness is a truth. And we need to understand, of course, we can have a relative look at goodness, but I mean in an absolute way, kindness, what helps everyone, what's a collective thought versus a tribal thought, and how can we get everyone to win in a way that works, not in an idealistic way, but in an honest, truthful way of helping society find its way, because it hasn't worked yet.
And I think one of the reasons for that, Peter, is that people ascribe a great value to community and to truthfulness. And 98% of the people, in fact, they have polls on this where people say that that's the most important value that they hold. So we all hold it. But what we fail to do is recognize how we undermine it. And that is an exercise in discernment, and as you pointed out, fear, which can be overcome. But the whole point of the book really is to say, look, I understand this. I went through it. I'm going through it. I'm a human being. I'm flawed. So the key is practice, the practice of integrity. It's not something you have. I made this point. It's not something you just do like a Nike commercial. You don't possess it permanently. You act with it.
Right. And your book is a great vehicle for people to get a handle on that.
Yeah, which is the key understanding. Because if you can start getting a handle and start using truthfulness as a resource for your personal authenticity, well, then the sky really is the limit. But if you're operating by fear and you're afraid of truth because you can't handle the truth, then you're going to be stuck in your ego and you're never going to be able to contribute to a community except in a stingy way.
Right, but what I'm getting though is that truth is difficult because you also want to know where it leads to. And often it leads to trouble because it's not convenient.
Yeah.
And I think that's really a hard point here, is that truth is not always convenient.
Yeah.
And if it hurts people, how much does it hurt people and how much can it distort things to make things worse rather than better? And so then there has to be strategies to introduce truth and explain truth to people so that they're not harmed by it.
You know, it's interesting, Peter. Last night I was giving a talk at a bookstore and someone got up and said, you know, I'd like to explore this issue of truthfulness with you. My young daughter, the daughter is now 30, but what he was talking about, the daughter was quite young and she was in bed. He was putting her to bed and she was really afraid of the future. And he said to her, don't worry, I will make sure things go well for you. I will take care of you. When you have difficulties, I will be there for you. And he was comforting her. And he said, he asked me, was I being untruthful? I can't predict the future. I didn't know whether I could really do those things. And my feeling was maybe every parent goes through this in some way or another. But the issue was, it was his aspiration to be there and to fulfill that promise.
Right.
For his daughter, the aspiration is the seed for the truthfulness that follows. So he felt, and I asked him, did you feel bound to do anything special to make sure that you realized that promise? And he said, yes, of course. And so the utterance of the truth is the beginning.
Well, those are what you call in your book explicit promises. And that's understandable. You know, I know that I'll do anything for my kids, you know, to take care of them, to make them well, keep them well. And we have that. It's a very honorable way of parenting is to want that. It's an aspiration. And it can be explicit. You can say to your children, I will always be there for you. But you don't know that you can be. There are all kinds of circumstances. So then what? then there's what you also call in the book implied promises. And I think implied means expectations that aren't necessarily explicit. And that adds to the mix of integrity, of needing to discern it more and more because of what might be implied rather than explicit.
Right. So the book really talks about explicit promises, which everybody understands. You just summarized it: taking care of your kids, visiting a sick relative, returning a borrowed book on the date that you promise, returning a wallet when you find it in the street, or going to church on Sunday as you promise, whatever it is. And those are obvious, but that's just part of the terrain. That's the tip of the iceberg. But below that are all the implied undertakings, which are easy to ignore. For instance, truthfulness when you break a date. There's an implied promise that if you break a promise, you will tell the truth about why you're breaking it and ask to be released from it. I go through other examples, like when people send you an email, even though some of us get hundreds of them, in many of those cases, there's an implied promise that you will get back to them because those folks writing to you have an expectation.
Right. Actually,
you know, I mean, some of them don't, and then there can be marketers and then these sham invitations. But it's not that hard to go through your email and say, does this person have a reasonable expectation that I will respond timely? And if they do, there's an implied promise to get back to them.
Right. But it's those feelings of being responsible. And if you feel responsible for your relationships with people, then you get back to them.
Well, it gets deeper too. I mean, you know, one of the examples we talk about is public radio, where the genesis of public radio was to provide this resource for people that wasn't being commercially available. And it wasn't a condition that people pay for it, but and that's in their charter. But anybody involved in public radio will tell you that a listener who listens frequently and has the means to contribute, who doesn't, is really breaching an implied promise, because it's clear that they need these resources and they can't run the operation.
They're not taking responsibility for being a listener.
Okay, so now we have, you. I think you crafted it. We have this idea of public responsibility that each of us is responsible for, even though we're not elected.
Right, and we can look at that in terms of voting. So many other implied promises that have to do with being responsible in life.
Including, this is something that all of us face in Manhattan, going to a street corner and seeing these fantastic accessories and suits that are cut rate, that are clearly available to us on the street corner only because they're stolen or counterfeit. And by buying them, we are breaching an implied promise to do our part to avoid the extension of that kind of corruption. Because by buying it, what are we doing? We're indulging it. And it goes into all these arenas of like stock ownership. What kind of stocks do we own?
You're opening a Pandora's box of so many things that go on in this world that aren't honorable that we might be indulging in.
I can know example. It's true. I could go on. I could go on for probably an hour.
Sure.
These, but I think one thing that's fascinating to me and that might be interesting to your listeners is the 2007 economic collapse where no one took responsibility. So you have homeowners applying for mortgages that they knew they could get even though they couldn't afford it, and then left it to the banks to bail them out. And the bankers who created these securities that were obviously bogus, and they left that to the government to bail them out. And the insurance companies that said, well, let's go ahead and just endorse this, even though they didn't have the resources to back it up, and the credit agencies. And somehow they were all small things that people did, leaving it to others to clean up.
I don't think they were so small. I think they were all convenient ways of making a buck on all sides, and people just wanted to ignore consequences.
That's probably more accurate.
Right. Well, we're getting near the end of the show, it's going to air. I'm going to air this tomorrow because next week you're going to be in New York. So, if people are listening who are in the area, you're going to be at the Shakespeare Bookstore on Broadway around 60th Street.
69th.
Oh, 69th Street.
Yeah, it's and the West Side Shakespeare and Company.
Shakespeare and Company Bookstore next Thursday, the 31st at 7 o'clock.
That's right. Thank you.
And your book is The Law of Small Things, and people should really grab it because it really helps us discern life better. And it's work for all of us constantly to keep on knowing what to believe in ourselves and in each other, to understand that we can live and to be proud of living with integrity.
Thank you. Absolutely.
So this, your book is a great gift for people to feel better about living a more purposeful, responsible life.
Well, thank you, Peter. It's a wonderful opportunity to be.
And is there a website or some?
Yeah. The my company is Integrity Intensive.
Integrity Intensive. That's cool.
Intensive. How about that? Or you can go to directly to the Law of Small Things blog, and I have postings on the meaning of integrity, or the Law of Small Things, and everything will come up. All you have to do is go there, and the website comes up, the blog, the book.
Oh, that's great.
And then, of course, I'm inviting your listeners to contact me, and there's a contact form. Oh, and there's a quiz. We probably should mention that
right. Well, we don't have much time, but the beginning of your book has 25 questions that are really good.
Well, that's great. Take the quiz. You can take the quiz online.
Okay, good.
And we let you know how you did.
Yeah, great. So thanks so much, Stuart Brody, for being on Energy Stew, and hopefully we can get you back again to talk more about integrity.
With pleasure, Peter.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org. And I'd love to hear from you. And thanks so much for listening. Thank you.